FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and you know, we got this cultural war going on. For many years, it looked like the left, the progressives, were going to win it. But maybe the rumors of the death of the conservative segment, the conservative culture, maybe they've been greatly exaggerated. Let us know what you think. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Right now, we want to hear what Bill Whittle thinks. We're big fans of Bill's for many years. He's been on the show before. You can find him at Bill Whittle, WHITTLE.com. Bill, welcome back. It's great to have you on.
So great to be back, Kerry.
So culture war, are we going to win it? Or are we going to lose it? Or is it going to be a bloody draw?
I think we've already won it. I know that's going to be hard for people to believe, given how left-wing Hollywood is and how much of a left-wing slant there is on everything. But paradoxically, I think that's the evidence that we've actually already won the culture war. And, you know, in the Pacific War and World War II, Midway happened just a few 6 months after Pearl Harbor. So most of the dying and bleeding was left to come. But by the time Midway was over, the Japanese had lost the war. And I feel like we've reached that point now. And I've got a lot of evidence to back this up as well. It's not just an assertion on my part.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of evidence do we have? I know there's been some major movie flops. And
they're not movie flops. Well, let me rephrase that. There have been not just movie flops, but the complete dissolution of entire franchises. These are billion-dollar money machines that have been essentially stopped in their tracks and then just disintegrated because of the injection of left-wing politics into what used to be non-political stuff that was just kind of fun. And most conservatives especially tend to think that the pop culture is maybe just a sort of a battlefield, maybe even a small battlefield in the bigger political war. But it's actually the opposite way around. The pop culture is our cultural mythology. It's our language. And that's where the actual battles for hearts and minds are being won and lost. And what I've seen in the last 2 years or so is that the left has become so absolutely insistent on imposing their ideology onto existing stories that they've destroyed them. And it's turned a generation of left-leaning millennials into a generation that is absolutely incandescent with rage at social justice warriors and this militant feminism and diversity quotas and all the rest of it. I don't want to keep batting it back to you, but I mean, there are literally scores of examples I could use.
Uh-huh. Well, what about what we have in our colleges? Really, everyone comes from the swamp. Everyone in the swamp comes from one of these left-wing progressive colleges, whatever you want to call them, communists.
Communes is a pretty good term. Communes with diplomas now, I guess.
Yeah. Communal diploma mills. And,
right.
You know, so that, it seems like they're still doing it here, right?
Oh, they are doing it. And they're getting more pervasive and more intense all the time, which to me is even more evidence that they've actually lost this battle. I had this insight about a year ago, and I think this is really important. I know many of our listeners out there may not be computer gamers, video gamers, and I know very few people who aren't gamers know what actually goes on in a video game. But the fact of the matter is that this young generation, this millennial generation, is spending 5-6 hours a day playing computer games now. And I'm like the world's oldest computer gamer. I got into it in 1981 or 82 on the Apple II. And I've been playing ever since. And somewhere about a year ago, Kelly, I had this realization that what you do in any computer game, really any computer game at all, really the only two things you do are you make money and you buy weapons. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, hang on a minute. I like making money and buying weapons and I'm a conservative. What's going on here? And mm-hmm. as I thought about this more, I became convinced that this entire generation, especially the young men, the you know, the millennials in the late teens to maybe mid 30s are so used to being battered by the social justice screeching that if you're a straight white male, you know, you're facing so much social criticism and it's impossible to fight against that, especially at that age. So they basically just nod their head and say, yeah, you're right. I'm a straight white male, or maybe I'm Christian and I'm really, really sorry. And then the first thing they do is they get out of there, out of that classroom, out of that social circle, go into their bedrooms, close the doors, and then they enter a world where they get to blow up ammo dumps and jump out of airplanes and shoot Nazis and drive fast and chase hot women, all the things that make life worth living. In other words, this entire millennial generation has checked out of the real world and checked into the computer game world because it allows them to act like conservatives. It's a place where they can act like conservatives without being constantly hectored about it. And that tells me that despite the indoctrination that goes into their head 24/7, ultimately you cannot change, you can't beat the biology out of people. And that's what all of these cultural landmarks are showing me now more and more clearly, that when the left insists on giving us a female black James Bond, which is coming up, a female Thor, when they rewrite the Terminator movies from scratch and destroy everything that's already existed in the Terminator movies, simply for the purpose of making the new leader of the revolution, of the human resistance, not a white male from America, but a Latino female from Mexico. When they go in and just rampantly destroy things in order to get their political philosophy fantasies realized, all they do is create really have to understand how much the pop culture influences young people to get how angry they are and how sick of it they are. And again, that's telling me that if you leave them alone, they will spend their own limited money and their own time trying to find a place where they can go and act like conservatives.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing I've noticed in movies, they, you know, this attack on men, like, you know, you mentioned the female James Bond, and then we had, you know, the remake of Mad Max using women.
Yep. And then Ghostbusters, female Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Tanked. And then I saw, was it one of those Oceans?
Yep. Ocean's 8 or something, yeah. An all female cast. Yep. And then Star Wars is the biggest example of this, where the entire idea of a heroic young male is just not only being replaced, it's being retroactively destroyed. These stories go back in time, so to speak, and turn Luke Skywalker from a heroic, optimistic young man into a cranky, old, bitter, murdering hermit loser. Right. And the destruction of the Luke Skywalker myth is very, very important for the left. They can't have the entire pop culture having figures of a guy with a sword in his hand rising up to confront the faceless empire. The entire idea of heroism has to be destroyed as toxic masculinity. And so in this last Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, what you find is all of the heroic actions that made Star Wars so much fun, which is basically guys climbing into spaceships to go out and fight incredible odds and defeat this Death Star. Mm-hmm. Now what you find in this latest movie is that this kind of thing is just childishness. And the women say, why don't you just go to your room and calm down, little boy? The women have got it all figured out. Yeah. And they do this to everything. And when they do it, they not only make a different movie, but they make a terrible movie. And and one of the things that the left is absolutely incapable of doing is, because they are so childish about this, because they're so determined to show strong, powerful women, that you get characters like Captain Marvel and you get characters like Rey in Star Wars. And because the producers are so determined to show how strong and powerful women are, these characters never fail at anything. They walk into the movie with all of the powers that it took Luke Skywalker 3 movies to slowly and painfully develop. There's a term for this called a Mary Sue, and it basically means you've written a character who's invincible, can't be beaten, can't be threatened, never does anything wrong, never loses. And that's just plain boring. And no one cares about a character that never loses and is never wrong. And they do it again and again and again and again and again. And that is telling me that the biology of people is intact and not only is not being changed by leftist indoctrination, it cannot be changed by leftist indoctrination. Young men are going to want to drive fast and blow things up and shoot Nazis and chase hot women, whether they have to do it in a virtual world or in the real world. And so their natures, they say they're socialists. In fact, they act, many of them vote like socialists. But if you take a look at what they actually do, everything they do is act like conservatives. I'll just give you one example just to give you an idea of the scale of this. A very, very fine video game, maybe one of the best ever made, came out this year called Red Dead Redemption Number 2. It's a Western game. It's a cowboy game. And the graphics are spectacular. And basically, you may be sitting in your bedroom there looking at your monitor, and you're riding a horse through the Old West. And you can get off and talk with people, and you can have gunfights and all the rest of this stuff. Red Dead Redemption made $550 million in 2 days.
Really?
That's from millennials. This is not people with tons and tons and tons of money. And the thunderbolt for me, Carrie, was that I just watched this millennial generation, big supporters of Bernie Sanders and stuff, just pay $550 million so they could play cowboys and Indians.
So this is digital cowboys and Indians.
That's exactly what it is.
Now that it's not cool.
And digital war stories and all the rest. I don't mean to steamroller you with this, but as I was talking about this earlier this year, I had a story I'll never forget. And after I was over, an older gentleman came up to me and said he was the guardian for his grandson, and that they used to be very close, but that he never saw his grandson anymore. The grandson was just completely hooked on these video games. He said, look, I'm a retired Marine. I don't know what to say to these guys. I don't know what he's doing in there. I just feel like I've lost him. And I said to him, well, sir, I'd be willing to bet you a large sum of money that what your grandson is doing right at that moment when he's in that room is he's trying to live your life. Mm-hmm. He's blowing up ammo dumps. He's you know, infiltrating positions. He's laying down suppressing fire. He's doing all of those things. He's trying to be you. And he said, well, what do I do about that? I said, well, I wouldn't talk to him about the video games because you don't know anything about that. But I might say to him sometime, you know, son, I know you're doing a lot of video games out there. And I was trained in squad tactics and movement and suppressing fire and stuff. And if you're interested in talking about it, I might be able to make you a better gamer. And he said he'd give it a try. That the look on his face when I told him, which was the fundamental truth, Gary, was that his grandson was spending all of his time locked away because he was trying to live the grandfather's life. He wanted adventure, and he wanted purpose, and he wanted buddies under fire, and he wanted the approval of a father figure like a sergeant. All of these games are built around these things. All of the male characters in these games are not these soy boy, pajama boy, you know, two hands on the giant cup of coffee in their felt pajamas kind of thing. These are rugged men with scars on their faces and deep voices. And one of the things that drives these video game stories, it sounds like a cliche, but it works. You know, you start off this series of adventures as a rookie, and the tough sergeant thinks you're useless and worthless. And over the course of 20, 30 hours of gameplay, and you accomplish enough of these missions, he starts to think more highly of you. And at the very end of the game, maybe he's killed in something or whatever. But the guy basically pats you on the shoulder and says, you know, son, I was wrong about you. You're a good man. And that's the emotional payoff. It's not, we're going to write a letter to the United Nations, and it's not, we're going to go out in the street and protest. It is a biological imperative that's being met in video games and formerly in movies. And that is being ruined now by the left, and young people are very angry. And that's a real opportunity for us.
That's interesting. You know, we talked about this the last time about the concept of these anti-bullying policies in our nation's schools and how absurd they are. And this kind of fits right in with that. You can't get rid of masculinity by just feminizing a masculine movie.
You cannot.
You can't get rid of it by passing an anti-bullying rule, because, you know, bullying is part of life.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Trilogy Metals is a world-class developer in Alaska's Ambler Mining District. The company already possesses 8 billion pounds of copper, 3 billion pounds of zinc, over 1 million gold equivalent ounces, and now over 77 million pounds of cobalt. Trilogy's Arctic project boasts an after-tax net present value of $1.4 billion with a 33% IRR. Trilogy is led by an experienced management team with proven success in discovering and developing projects in Alaska. Alaska. The company is well capitalized, has no debt, and possesses strong institutional support. Trilogy trades on the New York and Toronto exchanges under the ticker symbol TMQ. To learn more, go to TrilogyMetals.com. That's TrilogyMetals.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
There's an anti-bullying rule that is extremely effective, and it was taught to me by my father, and that is if somebody is bullying you, you have to get into a fight with them.
Yeah.
Because they're not looking to beat you up. They're not interested in beating you up. They're not giving you a hard time because they want to beat you up, no matter what you may think. And I don't blame you for being afraid of that, son. They're bigger than you are, and there's a bunch of them. But they're only doing one thing, and what they're doing is they're looking for weakness. And if you decide that you're going to stand up to them, you will find that not only do they no longer pursue you, they'll actually admire you a little bit and leave you alone. I personally believe that bullying is just sort of a evolutionary vestige of the kind of behavior that you would see. I've heard many stories that if a mare has a colt and the colt is deformed or has bad legs or something, that a number of females will circle it and lift it up, try and lift it up by its nose and get it on its feet. When a stallion comes in here and he sees the deformed legs, he just stomps it to death immediately. Now that's brutal, and that's what's necessary for the survival of the fittest. And let's not make any mistake about that. That's not the world I live in or I want to live in. I think the definition of civilization is taking care of the poor and the weak. But I think bullies have in them that genetic imperative that certainly all mammals share, which is eliminate the weak. If they're too weak to survive, then you've got to get rid of them. And so when you show a bully just determination, you don't have to beat him in a fight. You don't have to knock him out. You don't have to do anything. You just have to be willing to stand up to him. That disarms kill the weak mechanism in this obnoxious kid, and he moves on to other targets, and you're fine. And you only have to do that once.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that's very true. So standing up to him, even if you take a couple of lumps, even if you don't necessarily win the fight. And isn't that exactly what Donald Trump does every day in the political
precisely
environment?
Right.
He takes on the bullies.
Yep. He, he's constantly perpetually criticized for, you know, crass or he doesn't seem to have a plan or anything. And the left seems to think that if they tell us enough that Donald Trump has a sort of a storied past and he's not very nice. And on top of that, he doesn't have any policies.
Yeah.
Then the American people will finally wake up and throw him out of office. But what they cannot get through their heads, it's been 3 years now, they cannot get through their heads that the reason Donald Trump was elected was because he didn't have any big plans. He was elected because he didn't have plans for everybody. He was elected to go in there and smash up this corrupt China shop. And when you hear liberals saying he's ruining everything in Washington, he's fired this person, he's fired that person, mm-hmm. It's a catastrophe. It's like, no, this is not a catastrophe. He's doing the job we hired him for. And because we hired him to be essentially the destroyer of this system that had gotten so corrupt, so big, so expensive, so lazy, and so impersonal, because he was elected to go in there and destroy that, I'm speaking for myself here, but I know I'm speaking for a lot of other people too. I'm ready to put up with just about anything. I won't put up with felonious criminal behavior because I have standards.
Yeah.
But I will put up with anything else and support him. The more they attack him, the stronger my support for him becomes.
Hey, the enemy of my enemy is my friend, right? And
well, he's our friend regardless. Our friend. I would never call him the enemy of an enemy, but. But certainly, I think certainly there are some people, and I feel this occasionally, when I think to myself, you know, that tweet was really not necessary it's not very presidential in terms of just fundamental decorum. But anytime that thought enters my head, I just chased away immediately for the same reason that Lincoln dealt with so many criticisms of General Grant in his drinking. When he promoted Grant to command of the Union armies, lots of people said, Mr. President, the man's a drunk. He's a scruffy, dusty drunk. You can't have him in charge of the Army of the Potomac. And Lincoln turned to these people and he said, I cannot spare this man. He fights.
Yes, he fights.
And that's the Donald Trump story, I think.
And that was a Patton, the story of George Patton.
Patton, too.
He was the only general willing to accept European-sized casualties to achieve an objective. And that's what made him so effective. And, you know, they used to call
exactly
him
right.
Blood and Guts Patton. My blood, his guts, right?
Yeah, Yep. And Lincoln had a term for this. I thought it was one of the most poignant terms I've ever heard. When Lincoln was searching, he went through 7 generals before he got to Grant. Right. In the overall command of the Union armies. And Shelby Foote in his Civil War trilogy says that Lincoln would go around saying, I need a general who can face the arithmetic. Mm-hmm. And what he meant by that was one of the biggest Union defeats was Fredericksburg. We lost basically 2-1 there. And Lincoln took out a piece of paper, calculated the number of soldiers that the Confederacy had, calculated the number of soldiers that the Union had, and he realized that if we had nothing but a string of unending disasters like Fredericksburg, we'd win the war.
Yeah, attrition them out.
We'd win. So,
yeah.
And he needed a commander who could face the arithmetic, which meant you're going to have to kill a bunch of guys, and there's no way around it.
Yeah, and you're going to have a bunch of your men killed. That was something that Grant's predecessor, McClellan, just could not deal with that.
Right. You know? Could not.
Yeah.
Could not deal with it. And it wasn't just his concern for the troops, although he was a terrific training general. He was an amazing training general and a great political general. He was the Democratic Party nominee in 64.
And they loved him.
But he was not willing to get his hands dirty. He was not willing to get blood on his uniform. And the main thing is, he wasn't willing to destroy this beautiful thing that he'd created, which was the Army of the Potomac with their glistening bayonets and everybody marching. And he loved that army so much, he wasn't willing to destroy it. And I forget who it was. Some great general said, the hard part about this job is you have to destroy. I think it was actually Lee, come to think of it, who said, you have to destroy that thing you love most in the world, which is your army, if you're gonna win.
Yep. And Trump has grabbed those lessons, and he's taken us in directions that we never thought were possible.
And shown us things that I never thought I would see. I never thought I would see the head of the FBI involved in intricate plans to overturn an election of the American people and install their candidate. That simply because they thought that person was better for the country than the country did. Right. And I never thought I'd see that from the Central Intelligence Agency, and I never thought I'd see it from the FBI. I wasn't surprised when I saw it from the IRS.
Yeah,
but
that's their job.
but as a general rule, looking back on the Obama years and all the damage they did, the genius of what the leftists did with the 8 years they had with Obama was they took over justice first. They took over the Justice Department. And the brilliance of that is if you take over the Justice Department, then anything you do from that point forward, you do with impunity. You're not going to be investigated. You're not. And if you are investigated, you're not going to be charged. And if you own the Justice Department, you can get away with murder everywhere else. And that's why I have such high hopes for our new Attorney General. And I just constantly pray that right as we speak, there are guys sitting in a dark room someplace amassing folders that extend up to the floor full of evidence that they're going to bring out on a forklift and make some of these people just simply understand that they're going to have to obey the same law as the rest of us.
Yeah, it's really shocking. Well, he kind of lifted the veil off of everything. Those Republican Party think tanks, the National Review, all of these people who you thought really wanted to accomplish something, and then all of a sudden he just ripped the veil right off of them and showed them for who they were.
I have a reliable story. It's hearsay story. I didn't see it myself, but I heard it from somebody who did see it himself. Early on in the campaign, when Jeb Bush was running, they met with this friend of mine, and it became clear during the course of this exceedingly expensive dinner that the Bush campaign would rather see Hillary Clinton win than Donald Trump. In fact, they came out and said so openly.
Oh, for sure.
They just openly said so.
Yeah.
And so there's your reward.
Mm-hmm. And not to mention all the endless wars, he kind of ripped the veil off of that as well, how destructive they've been to the country and what little, if any, purpose they serve to further American interests.
Continue to maintain. There's something I don't hear many people talk about. I think it's critically important. I remember September 11th. Everybody remembers September 11th. And on September 12th, Al-Qaeda had anywhere between 40 to 80,000 armed warriors.
Mm-hmm.
And we were expecting to see them in in shopping malls and on airplanes.
I remember.
Any day now. And that never happened. And the reason that never happened is because no less than 40,000 of those terrorists were killed in Iraq by U.S. military forces. No less than that. And while the Iraq war can be looked at as a political failure and the same for Afghanistan and a great waste of blood and treasure, we do have to pay attention to the things that didn't happen because of this action. Anytime somebody does something or doesn't do something, they commit an action or they don't, the consequences unfold in the real world, and we can look at that course of action and say, well, this was positive, this was negative. But sometimes you have to pay attention to the course that wasn't taken.
Yeah.
And I think that 40 to 80,000 Al-Qaeda terrorists buried in the sands of Iraq was what those 4,000 U.S. Military personnel gave their lives for in Iraq and continue to do in Afghanistan.
Yeah, that's a question of you can't hear the dog that doesn't bark.
That's exactly right. You can't hear the dog that doesn't bark, and you don't have to fear the wolf that's been shot by a hunter while you were sleeping, you know, nice and snugly in your bed.
Yeah, but you have to wonder what was really accomplished by it all. I mean, I was definitely pro-war, but became into this nation-building thing that just never works for us. That's where we lose the peace.
Yes, I think our mistake was, well, certainly in Iraq, it was a mistake to basically try to de-Saddamize, you know, de-bathification of the military. What we found in Germany was that you basically had to turn, right after the war was over, you had to turn a lot of the governance of Germany, and same for Japan as well, over to former authorities. You had to mercilessly eradicate the ideology, but the actual personnel pretty much stayed in place, and we didn't do that in Iraq. And I think we all overestimated perhaps the appeal of democracy. And I remember seeing so many of those Iraqis with their stained fingers, going to election. Vote and facing bombs at the polling places. And I thought this was worthwhile. I think, you know, ultimately, Kerry, I think what it is we went 80% of the way and we didn't go all the way. We should have dictated that constitution. We should have simply dictated it to them. This is as MacArthur did in Japan. This is how freedom works. This is how a republic works. And this is how it's going to work here. And we didn't do that. Mm-hmm. I think we were overly sensitive to that. And that sensitivity basically cost us dearly. Yeah. I mean, if you're going to go in with tanks and airplanes and guns, and you're going to stop a murdering tyrant, and you've decided in advance that you're going to try and replace that government with a better one, mm-hmm. then the military operation was unparalleled. But the political execution of that follow-up was never wholehearted. Yeah. That's a great tragedy.
We had really incompetent people running things there.
When George Bush left office, there hadn't been a single American fatality in Iraq for 6 months. Mm-hmm. I mean, George Bush launched the invasion. The first two-thirds of the occupation were really badly handled. But then along came Petraeus and the surge. And by the time the surge was over, Iraq was pretty much pacified, at least as terms as U.S. casualties were concerned. And then Barack Obama decides he can't sign a simple status of forces agreement to allow us to keep bases there. So the U.S. pulls out of Iraq. The Democrats get their political victory, and the whole thing falls apart. And next thing you know, you've got ISIS and all the rest of it. You either go or you don't. And if you're going to go, you got to go all the way, and you got to be prepared to not only win the fight and win the war, you got to win the peace as well. So now, looking at what we've learned since then, I think things like these, I'm happy to see our soldiers come home. I think our special forces guys roam the world with impunity and should continue to do so. I know a number of SEAL team members. Have been a great honor of mine to have met many of them because of some of the writing I do about them. And these guys don't want to come home. These guys want to go out, jump out of airplanes at 3 a.m. and kill bad guys. That's how they're built. Mm-hmm. They're sheepdogs, and they're protecting American people, and they like it out there. So special forces raids against terrorist strongholds like the one that got al-Baghdadi, great. remote control terrorist strikes against known terrorist assets from Predator drones or Reaper drones, great. But regular soldiers on the ground, no, thank you. Trying to solve your 700-800-year-old, family squabble, nope, we're done with that too. I think we have to look at the situation in Iraq and Afghanistan and Syria, that entire region. We just have to look at it now as, no, right, we're no longer going to try and make this into a beautiful palace. We're just going to go out and mow the lawn.
Yeah.
You know, every 3 or 4 weeks we go out and mow the lawn. And that's it.
Mm. Well, you can understand why a large swath of the country is disenchanted about the way all of this has worked out, and feeling that there were a lot of lives and money wasted. Yours is definitely another perspective. So where are we going here? You think the progressives, the Democratic Party, are just going to kind of melt down, cease to exist?
No, or? Certainly not. But I do think, you know, people vote on how they feel, not on what they think. It'd be nice if it were the other way around, but it's not. People vote on their feelings. And we see this again and again and again. In fact, a great example of this was after the 2012 election, exit polling. People have already made their vote. They've got no reason to lie to anybody. Exit polling in 2012 showed that Romney won on the economy, he won on national defense, he won on job creation, he won on everything. Romney won on everything except for one category. And the one thing Romney lost on to Obama was, who do you think cares more about you? And Obama had, I think, 86% of that vote, or 90% of it or something.
Yeah, well.
So people will, whether it's true or not, that's how they'll vote. And, yes. And what I'm finding in the pop culture is more and more and more examples of people rejecting this ideology, and not only rejecting this progressivism, but angrily rejecting it and being sick and tired of having them follow them everywhere they go and tell them what they should be thinking and doing.
Yeah.
So I think I don't want to jinx anything, obviously, mm-hmm. but right now I think Donald Trump is in extremely good shape.
Yeah.
Because if he's up by 2 or 3 points against the unnamed Democratic generic candidate,
yeah,
people tend to vote against what they want. When they find that he's up against Elizabeth Warren or up against Joe Biden, now there's another face on the table. I think he's going to double his numbers. I don't want to get cocky or anything, but right now I'm feeling pretty good. And there's a lot of signs that the Democrats are in panic about it, which makes me happy.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Hey, just getting back to Mitt Romney, you know, there is another thing. And that Romney came across as inauthentic, blow-dried, yep, focus group-driven politician. Yep. And talk about ripping the veil off of Mitt Romney. That was another thing that Trump did. And
yeah.
You know, another thing to be grateful for. Well, we got to kind of wrap it up, but we got from playing on Game Boys to blowing up the Middle East and everything in between.
Yeah, we make the rounds every now and then, Gary. Take a walk around the block.
Hey, it's always great to have you on. So great, just tell us, where do we find you again?
I do, believe it or not, 11 shows a week here at BillWhittle.com. We do a Bill Whittle Now every day, which is me talking about the latest headlines. Scott Ott, my good friend and deep patriot, is constantly playing the role of a badgering progressive reporter. And so we take issues of the day and we really run them through the ringer, not just the argument, but the counter argument and the rebuttal. We do 5 of those a week, and we do 5 right angles, which I do with Steve Green and Scott Ott, where we take a more lighthearted look at what's going on in the news from sort of a cultural perspective. And all of that is at BillWhittle.com. And we're membership driven. There's just very few people that make this stuff available, but through the work of, you know, several thousand paying members, I think somebody did a calculation not too long ago, and I think it's 80 million views for us now. 80 million.
Amazing. Well, you know, one of the things is your studio, you put out extremely high quality content, as we like to call it in the trade, but your shows are really well produced. You're very knowledgeable. They're very researched out. So you definitely should go over to BillWhittle.com, check out Bill's shows. Even if I lose a couple of you out there because you like him better than me, that's okay, because he's worth listening to. You can hear the wisdom. And Bill, we will definitely talk to you again soon. Oh, by the way, out there, if you got a question for Bill or myself, the email is kl@kerrylutz.com. The Twitter feed's @KerryLutz. Facebook page, Financial Survival Network. And the website, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. please subscribe, like, share, thumbs up, comment. We love getting your comments. I'm working on them now. Bill, we'll talk to you again real soon. Thanks so much.
You take care, Kerry. Thanks again. You're doing great work out there.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.